Welcome to season 6 of Never the Empty Nest, y'all. We're starting off with a bang. Orlando Mendez, the Cuban cowboy. Here we go.
Like a sparrow building shelter with branches for its young. My mother built a nest with love for her little ones. My grandfather told her, doesn't matter what you have. The only thing you need for life is each other's helping hands. Never the empty nest, my mother always says. Spread your wings and fly, you can always come back to rest. Never the empty nest, my mother always says. Wherever you may go to grow, this will always be your home.
All right, hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Never the Empty Nest, which is amazing. We're here, all three of us, and we're going to have an amazing guest a little later down the line, Orlando Mendez, the Cuban cowboy.
Woo-hoo!
Super cool. And we'll talk about him in a little bit, but he's a Cuban country singer, also actor extraordinaire who was on The Voice, and we're really excited. But before we have him on, everybody, hi. I'm Vanessa, and
I'm Jackie.
And I'm Nicole.
And today we are here after a very, very crazy week. We kind of were like, I don't even know like where to start with this, right? But I'll start. So last week, at some point, I went to the hospital because I had a headache that had been lasting way too long and it became unbearable. So I went into the hospital and I was there for 4 nights and 5 days. And I apparently, as a very, you know, smooth talking, very good bedside mannered neurologist said, hey, you sprung a leak, which meant that I had something called a CSF leak, which is a cerebral spinal fluid leak. All kinds of fucking scary things happened. And then they did something called a blood patch, which they basically take your own blood and put it up your spine and patch you up with your own blood. So that happened. And now I'm on the mend. Now I'm on the mend. And we're going to have Mendez on and everything is good. But it has been a bit insane. And all joking aside, it's been a moment of deep reflection. Let's just say that. And I think, you know, I'll let the nest talk very briefly and then we'll bring on Orlando because it's going to be a really good podcast. And I have to say that I was looking forward. This is how much I know we love, like the nest is important because I was like in the hospital at one point and I was looking forward to the nest, you know, like to doing the podcast and talking on it. And you just know you're, I don't know, you're in the right place doing the right things when you're thinking about these things, even in moments of deep existential crisis, you know? So mom, your turn.
I'm just going to say that her week was my week.
Yeah.
And we're in a very happy place right now, thanks to our good God, modern science, and Vane letting mommy take care of her for a whole week. I mean, isn't that amazing?
Yeah, I mean, I'll add that what happened when I got out of the hospital was that because of the procedure, my kids can't be jumping on me. And I have a 3-year-old, clearly, who doesn't really understand it. But we were going to sort of navigate that, except that the older one, right when I got into the house and he got a fever. So I think God was like, you need to leave the house because there was no way. So literally, it was like I walked into the house and 2 seconds later, Ignacio was like, I think he has a fever. Oh my God. And then the next day he was puking. It was a whole thing. So I was, it was like this sign of like, go.
Yeah.
Go.
And especially because the doctor said you had to rest for a week, like full rest.
For 7 days. Yeah. So anyway, that happened. Anyway, Nikki, any leading thoughts before we bring in?
No, again, I mean, you
singing.
Obviously, it's been a scary, emotional, stressful, prayer-filled week. Me over here not being able to do anything, which is also like just really shitty. And then like crying in my bathroom with the door closed so my kids don't freak out. But anyways, we're super grateful that it was something that is totally treatable. It got fixed and obviously so relieved that your pain is gone because it was horrific. And that's it. I mean, other than that, Busting my ass selling cookies for my daughter's Girl Scout troop. That's where I'm at. That's where I'm at, guys.
I bought four.
Thank you. I've been calling everyone. Orlando knows. I even texted our Amparo family, the whole shebang, the whole family.
I just want to say that in moments like this, you have your little supportness around you. And the three of us, believe that there is a much higher power than us. And I had amazing peace throughout this process when they were giving us, is it the brain? Is it the thing? Is it the that? I mean, Nikki lost it. So I was there, and I know it wasn't me that I was filled with grace. It's the only thing that I can think of. But then when everything was done and everything was good, then it was my moment to break down. But here we are.
The release. The release. Yeah.
I will also say, should I say what Taika saw? Oh, what?
Yes.
So the next day, Iggs is like, I have to tell you something that just happened. And I was like, okay. And he's like, so, Taika, why don't you tell mommy about what happened last night? He's like, well, he's six. Well, I went into the other room looking for mommy, and there was a light, and I saw Jesus in the light.
What?
And I was like, wow.
Wow.
And I was like, he's like, mommy, why is Jesus in the light? And I was like, oh, well, that's where he lives.
Jesus is the light.
He is the light. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, we talked a lot, but I never even say Jesus. I say Papa Dios. So
right.
There was a whole, I was actually very, I was like, wow, he doesn't go to Catholic school. Do you know what I mean? Like, I was very kind of like, what the heck? Anyway, that's the beginning of our podcast. And the rest of our podcast is about Orlando.
Hey.
And it's all connected. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about him, Nest listeners, because he's pretty amazing. So as I said, Orlando is the Cuban cowboy. He is born in Miami, raised in Miami, and he is the son of Cuban exiles. He's a Cuban American. He went to the University of Florida and he studied acting, and that's actually how we know him. He was in Amparo. And he was an amazing part of it. And when he was there, we knew that he sang. And then we knew how well he sang. And then we figured out he sang country. And then one day he ended up on the freaking Voice, like on The Voice.
Insane.
Not just ended up on The Voice. All four of the panelists turned around for him. So it's Blake Shelton, John Legend, Gwen Stefani, and Camila Cabello. All of those turned around for him.
Amazing.
And then he moved to Nashville. And we've worked with him since because he's just family now. We like feel like completely a part of our nest. You know, when you meet someone that you're like, this dude's amazing, and you just feel connection. And every time something good happens, you're like, yes. Like there are moments in my life, and I've talked about this with Richard Blanco. Like when I saw him up there, like a Juanito on like saying a speech for Obama, and then I'm not a speech, a poem. And then when Orlando was on The Voice, I was like, yeah. It just happens.
Totally.
Like, he's so freaking happy. So welcome, Orlando, to the nest.
What's up? I'm so excited to be here. This has been honestly something I've been looking forward to for a few weeks. So thank you for having me on. Introduction of a lifetime right there. I appreciate you.
It's amazing to have you on. And we've been listening to your songs for a while now. And we introduced my mom to them. So she's very excited about them. And I feel like I kind of want to start with Miami or Me. When did it come out? It's very new.
Yes, that was the latest single. It released on February 9th, my first single of 2024.
Amazing. Can you tell us? I'm kind of debating here in my mind and like whether we should play it or you should tell us a little bit about it, but why don't we play a little bit? Let's play a snippet.
Miami of me. Miami of me. Yeah, you went out on a limb, left your family and friends to come chase a singing man who you saw alive with, and ever since. Those boat rides on the bay with
So I wanted to play that first before you told us a little bit about where it comes from and what it's about, because I know what happened to me when I heard it and all the feelings that came up. But I want to know from you, like, where does it come from?
There's a lot to unpack here. So I made the move to Nashville, you know, like you said, born and raised in Miami all my life. My entire family is here, all my friends here. My whole existence has been surrounded by Miami, Florida. And I made the move to Nashville last year, beginning of 2023. And blessed enough to have a great girlfriend who decided that she would leave her life here in Miami as well and take that leap of faith with me to Nashville. But it wasn't all smooth sailing, and still not all smooth sailing, leaving everything you know to go to a different place on a much smaller scale than my grandparents did when they left Cuba. And I'm sure, you know, we'll get into all that, but still a tough sacrifice. And so my girlfriend also had struggles and times where she missed her family and friends. And there was a moment there that got a little rocky. I thought, well, I might lose her back to Miami. And that was kind of the precipice and the inspiration for the song.
Yeah. I know that when I listen to it, Miami's hard to leave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Miami's very hard to leave. And some of that is in the song. And I think some of it is in what you just said, which is like the people who are here and our parents and our grandparents, you know, that had to leave Cuba to come here, have created a particular kind of life here. And leaving, the act of leaving, becomes something else, something kind of bigger. And so it's all like embedded in that, you know. It's hard enough to leave a place that you love. And then there's all that mixed in. I know my mom wanted to say something.
It's a very profound song. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
And for people like me, right, and your generation, which is not my generation, but we feel the same way because I'm a Cuban refugee. I came when I was, 5 years old. My parents left everything behind, you know, the same story. But because I was raised here and there's so much Cuba in Miami, when I leave Miami, I feel like I'm leaving my country behind. And it's a very profound and complicated feeling because I love the United States of America. I love Cuba. But the simplest way that I can put it is that Miami's my country. This is where I live. This is where I was raised. And this is where so much of my roots, heritage, everything is here. So when I heard your song, I first of all was mesmerized by the fact that your generation feels that way as well.
Can you tell us what that whole journey up to leaving, like what that was like, the decision, yeah, going? I mean, I can already hear a little twang in your voice. So it's amazing.
And the change.
But also like what it was like, why you decided, I have to do this, you know? And as artists, we like innately get it, you know? So tell us.
It was a very hard decision. I knew it was the decision I had to make. I had kind of, you know, being in the country world, I was blessed to form a little bit of a community down here, a little bit of a fan base. I had, you know, loyal followers who would come out to the shows, but I had reached a little bit of a ceiling here in South Florida for what I could achieve in the country market. Obviously, Nashville is the capital of country music, where all of the country legends and artists of our time reside and network. And so I was like, there's only one place to go. But let me tell you, it took me more than a year to finally make that leap. Took a lot of prayer, a lot of hard conversations. And it's fascinating what you were saying before, because I was having the conversation with my mom, how it's a different life here. And the sun shines different here. And my drummer was telling me, he's like, you smile different when you're in Miami. You just seem to thrive different when you're in Miami. It's because these are my people. I'm in Tennessee and sure, I get along great with mostly everyone and I gel with the country crowd and all that, but they're not my people, not who I relate to the most. So I'm here in Miami and I get back around my Cubans and my Latinos. And I mean, it's a different game, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And Tennessee's awesome. You know, like it's a very cool place.
But I imagine that was a major culture shock, obviously, when you get there. I mean, how was that transition?
Oh, and I never realized how much the ocean has an effect on me.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And and the separation from the ocean has an effect.
Yes.
On me. And I took it for granted here. Mm-hmm. You know, I took it for granted that I was always on a boat. I always had the beach at my disposal. I always had salt air. And you get to a place where you're landlocked and you're like,
yeah,
I feel out of touch.
That's true. I didn't think about that for you. Because for me, I still have beach over here in LA. Wow. Yeah, I didn't think about that.
But you know where I felt that? And it's funny because you shouldn't because it's an island. But I felt that in New York, you know, like because it doesn't feel like an island when you're inside. When you're in Manhattan, and it doesn't feel that way. And when you say that, I like deeply remember missing the ocean. Mm-hmm. Just like that it's there and it's the ocean. Like the sand is there and you can step on it and you can go in if you want. You don't have to. You just have the salt and the... It's just a different thing, you know. Orlando, did your brother go also with you?
Yes.
He did. Yeah, my little brother made the same leap, which was really, I mean, it was amazing to have him there, a little piece of home with me in Nashville and my best friend. It was awesome. He has since made the move back here to work with my dad. He got a great opportunity to continue the family business. So he's back here at home. But it was great to have him there for a year.
I feel like just that's so Cuban to be like, wait, you're leaving? No, I'm going with you.
And it was immediate. No questions asked. Like, I'll be there.
I feel you. Me and my sister have kind of followed each other from coast to coast. I mean, now we're separated, but we've lived together in different cities for years on and off.
Yeah. I mean, I went to New York and then I was in New York for a while. And then my sister came to New York and then we were in Miami for a while. And then she moved to LA and I was like, ay, espérate. I'm just going to apply to schools in LA.
And then she went and got her doctorate in LA.
That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it is. Honestly, I feel lucky to be raised in a nest in that way. You know, and we talk about it all the time, but just kind of being enmeshed and the net that goes across country at times, you know, because you just can't separate completely, you know.
Orlando, as I'm listening to you, right? And I'm listening and hearing you and how you speak and how much Miami is you. I believe, you know, we are in our DNA. We inherit experiences and previous generations, and it's a real thing. And there is country in you because I can see it, feel it, hear it. So you are a great combination. Tennessee is your home too because it pulled you in. It's a perfect combination. You're going to do great things.
Thank you.
Sometimes when we're talking about Cuban works or pieces or even language, some of it, songs, I found myself talking a lot last year about, because that's very Guajiro. That's very, that is of the country.
Country, yeah.
Very country in like the Cuban version, which is not that different. It's different, but it's not that different, you know?
I was about to say that.
So I don't know if you feel that at all, which is, I think, where my mom is coming from.
Yeah, and that's what I'm trying. That's what I try to translate sometimes too. Is that maybe I wasn't born in Georgia or Alabama or Mississippi, but there is a part of country emotion and country feeling. I mean, my grandparents were tobacco farmers back in Cuba for generations. El campo. They had la finca. They had el campo, and you know, and for generations. And I still feel that draw and that allure to like a simpler life, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like a life more rooted in family and in nature, you know, in the earth.
I was going to ask about the tobacco farmers and like a little bit of the background of, you know, where they come from and even where in Cuba and when they came, all that stuff.
So they were tobacco farmers for generations. They had 400 acres, 400 something acres. I forget the amount. They left in 1962. After the Castro regime came and confiscated the land and said, well, you can stay, but this belongs to the state, or you can leave, but you leave with the clothes on your back. And they left, made the sacrifice, made their way to Spain, made their way to Puerto Rico, where my dad was born, as they got to Puerto Rico.
Wow.
And lived there for 10 years.
Hang on. As they got to Puerto Rico, like in the journey?
Yes.
Where?
Well, no, he was born in Puerto Rico, but like
had just arrived.
As they just arrived to San Juan.
Wow.
He was born.
That's amazing. I mean, I think this is probably a good moment to listen to a little bit of the song that's going to come out right in a few days called Motherland. And obviously, this is where it all comes from. So let's listen to a little bit of that.
Well, I heard it was Hemingway's paradise before that island fell. The mojito stopped flowing with mint and lime. You can blame it all on Fidel. How long he's gonna keep my people down? Time will only tell. But you cannot take the Cuban bribe, so Castro can go to hell. And sure, I ain't never been there. I ain't never touched that sand. But it's where my family came from, and it makes me who I am. This deep-rooted connection, at times I don't understand. But as I'm sitting here right now, I'll tell you, man, there's only 90 miles and a cigar in my hand between me and the motherland. Between me and the motherland.
Okay, so that is obviously an amazing, beautiful song. And that's where, I mean, you could hear where everything comes from, you know, like in the story that you're telling. But do you want to talk a little bit about what writing that and when you wrote it and why?
That was one of the first songs I wrote, believe it or not. I was truly inspired by Amparo. That whole experience kind of took me into a deep dive on my family's history and what that means to me. And, you know, why I'm connected to this island that I've never been to. But why it has such a deep influence for me because of the people that I love and because people who made me who I am. So I did a deep dive on that one day. I had just learned how to play the guitar, like in the middle of the pandemic. I was learning how to play guitar. I only knew a couple chords, but just knew how to play guitar. And I was like, I want to write a song that's a tribute to my grandparents, to the sacrifice they made, and just put, you know, it kind of flowed out, to be honest.
Yeah.
Years ago now, but yeah, song special to me.
It's beautiful.
That's beautiful.
When we talk about things, I always like to think, let's not get lost in the example. The example here is obviously Cuba and Cuban Americans, but this is deeper than that. This is about how I take it, how I feel it. It's how we honor, how you've honored two things, how we honor and how you've honored what you're made of, where you come from, and how you honor where you are, and how great a nation this is, that actually on this fabric where people came from all over the place. I went to school in the 70s, right? High school, that's how old I am, excuse me, and college. And we used, I've never heard it again, you know, that this is the melting pot. And so when you talk about this, it's wonderful to hear that still, after all these years, your generation didn't forget. Actually, it's honoring where you're coming from. And I know that other cultures do the same thing. And that's the beauty of it. And and that's what makes us one. So it's a beautiful thing.
So since the melting pot situation, there have been many ways of speaking. And, you know, there's been like, you can't say that. You should say it like this. Or you can say it because you don't disappear. And
right.
You know, the many, many different versions of the thing. But I think the point is that there has been a sort of like, I think that we definitely feel grateful still for everything that the country has given to us and what America is at its core and at its best. And I think that is in your songs, you know, it feels like it's in your songs. So I think you're here, you heard that all over there, all over the songs, Mom, no?
Yes, it's exactly, and probably melting pot is not politically correct or whatever it is nowadays.
No, because you said you hadn't heard it anymore. So I was like, yeah, because this is why.
And that's fine, and it's okay, and words are powerful, and I understand that. But no matter what, when you melt everything together, once you put it together, it's made of all those different parts.
Right.
And you can't separate them, and you shouldn't.
Yeah,
I agree.
For sure, and that's a big sentiment of the song. Like, the United States is my home. It's the home that gave a place for my grandparents to thrive, for my parents to thrive, and now for me to be trying to achieve a crazy dream of being a country music singer, a Cuban guy from Miami. You know, like, It's just, there's something beautiful about that. But it also, in my song, is paying tribute to this place that I've never been to, but that makes me who I am by the people that I love.
Speaking of your parents, how do they feel about you being a country star?
They love it.
That's connected to the question I have.
My parents never listened to a lick of country music.
That's what I was going to ask you. Yeah. Like, why country, and how did you get into country music in Miami as a kid? Because country's everywhere, but not so much in Miami, really. Like, at least growing up, you know, it's changed. But yeah, I was like, how did you get into country music? Were you like the only one in your family that was into it? All that. I'm just curious.
Yeah. And it wasn't much of a thing when I was growing up either. I remember pretty much never hearing country music until I got to middle school age and then early high school. I remember happening upon Darius Rucker, who was the lead singer of Hootie and the Blowfish. And
awesome.
I kind of made that connection. Hey, I've heard this voice my whole life. You know, I'm such a baby. Yeah, the dolphins make me cry. And I was like, I've been singing that song. I've been singing that line my whole life. Did a deep dive into his music. And I was like, this is awesome. I mean, like, the stories, the melodies, there was something that just got to me. You know, and then he was kind of the gateway, if you can say, to Dierks Bentley, Blake Shelton, Billy Currant, Carrie Underwood, all these amazing country singers I started listening to, and I fell in love with country music. That was it for me.
Yeah. I love the storytelling in country music. I love it. I listen to it all the time. My kids are like, no, they don't like
it. That's funny. My kids like it.
Except, like, sometimes I'm like, okay, well, we've listened to that a million times. Like, I have had to hear the Sonic song 3,010 times this morning. So we're going to listen to one of mommy's songs. And then Tyka will say something like, fine, play by Dirt.
I'm like, great okay. song.
Yeah, it is a great song. Yours, Nikki? Do yours accept?
Yeah. Lily really likes the country folk, but with a little like poppy, like she loves Kacey Musgraves, you know, like the more poppy kind of folky, because she's got more of like a retro 70s folky vibe. But they both like country. By the way, Orlando, I've told you this, but when I came back from recording Moonshine in Nashville with you, like, my son became obsessed with that song. And my daughter too, she's like, she would tell her friends, like, have you heard my mom's song? And then she'd like make me play in the car. But my son is obsessed with you. And he's like, does Orlando have a new song? Is that Orlando? Can you put one of his songs? Like, my son loves your music.
That is the cutest.
It's so cute. Yeah, yeah. He really, really loves it. And he asks about you randomly sometimes. So I'm like, I'm going to have to take him to Nashville because he's going to love it. And your voice also is just so, you have such a beautiful and like rich tone to your voice, and you can learn, but you can't really teach, you know, just really soulful, cool. I love your voice, and I'm so happy that you're doing well and doing your thing and following your dreams, and you know, it's not easy. So I just wanted to say that.
Thank you, Nicole. I appreciate you.
I will say that what Nikki was talking about was that, Nikki and Vicky, who has also been on the podcast and is the company partner, went to Nashville and they recorded a song called Moonshine all together for a play called Hashtag Graced. And that song is out too. It's up for you to listen to. And it's awesome. I want to play now, since we've been talking so much about country, one of the songs that feels very country, which is Front Porch Heartbreak.
I love that one.
So it's so good. Yeah. You know, I feel like that one and Bad Decisions is like...
I love Bad Decisions. Like, I think that's like my favorite one.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Front Porch Heartbreak, it also has like a little rock vibe with the guitar.
Yeah.
Like I love the instrumentals and your like voice. It's just a great combination, that song.
Let's listen to it now a little bit.
This will go down.
So where does the inspiration for something like that come from? And then, Orlando, we want to hear about, like, what was the voice like? You know, like, what was it like to... So many questions about that. But, like, first talk a little bit about that song.
So Front Porch Heartbreak is a true story, believe it or not. I had a relationship which lasted way too long. But, no, it lasted several years. But we had a string of breakups at the end that always seemed to take place in my front yard. And like one of the last times I remember standing there as she had driven away, and I'm standing there, I was like, this always happens here. There's a song here somewhere, my artist brain, you know, using trauma, yeah. Using trauma to create.
Yeah. And I was like, of course.
I was like, man, there's got to be something here. I said, I guess this is just another front porch heartbreak. I like that. And I wanted, and it was another one that just kind of flowed. There's times, Vane, Nikki, I'm sure you guys relate to this. There's times where you sit down and you're like, okay, I have to write something. And it'll take you hours or days. And maybe it doesn't even come out like you like.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like you like it to. And then there's stuff that takes 30 minutes, 40 minutes, an hour. Yeah. And you're like, I could never have forced this.
Yeah. I've been there.
The best.
That was one of those. It just flowed out of me.
That's awesome. So the voice. First of all, how did you audition? What was it like once you got there? Like, take us through the journey of getting there and then being like, oh, shit, these four people have turned around.
I got you. It was, I mean, still the craziest journey I've had so far. And originally, I didn't want to do it. So obviously, as you all know, I was an actor before I started pursuing singing. So I got all the bulletins, all the actors access. I forgot the name of them now, but they all come across my email. And I saw one day The Voice, an all call. I was like, I'm not doing that. didn't pay it any mind. I was like, I don't really want to do reality TV or a competition for that matter. So I was like, no, it's okay. But I had a friend of mine who saw it as well. We went to the gym together and he told me, hey, have you seen this? They're auditioning for The Voice. I said, yeah, I saw it. Not interested. He's like, you're stupid if you don't do this. And wow. I was like, I mean, you know, I just don't think I'm good enough. That was the phrase that made him go, no, you're going to sign up or I'm going to sign you up. At least do the audition and then just don't do anything else. Just do the audition. I was like, okay, a virtual open all call audition. I did it. It went well. I got past that round. And then there was like four or five more virtual rounds for them to cut it down to 100. And they flew us out to LA.
Wow.
And for the blind auditions. And out of that 100, only about 65 or 70 of us were able to audition for the coaches.
Yeah, because that's what people don't understand, how hard it is. You have to go through so many rounds just to get in front of them.
Yeah.
Like, just to get in the show is already, you've already like advanced so much.
You've
like,
already
people
won.
Don't realize the like how intense it is.
It's a grind. Like, you know, what happens behind the scenes, they only show that first round like as if that's the first thing. But you've been going for almost a year. Auditioning.
And then there's people like in a hotel room that never even get on the stage.
And that is so tragic. I had friends, so many friends who were there for weeks because we were there almost 3-4 weeks before we did the audition. And they jumped through all these hoops, did the interviews, did the practices.
Wow.
The talks with the band and never were able to audition.
Wow. What was it like being up there? Like in that moment where you're like, okay, I'm going to do this audition and here it is and they're turned around. Like, what was the feeling doing it and then them turning around? And of course it's like they all, it's very suspenseful. It's like one and then the other.
Yeah. I'll give you a little bit of behind the scenes. I don't know if I've ever said this on any of the interviews I've done, but I was on the third day of auditioning and they get you up early, like 4:30 or 5 o'clock in the morning. You got to go to, you know, wardrobe and makeup and you could be there all day. They don't tell you when you're going. And so I'm there, my parents are there. They put you in a room with your parents for a little while. And then they take us backstage and I'm pacing. And the producer comes up to me and she goes, hey, you're first, go kill it.
Oh my God.
Like, what?
I mean, it's good and bad, you know? I don't know.
Yeah,
But it's terrifying, yeah.
It's terrifying because you're expecting, you know, maybe I might not go until 8 o'clock at night or whatever. And you're opening the show. Good luck.
Oh my God.
You get the judges. The first one of the day. So I remember standing in front of, they have this big door with a V on it and they put you right in front of it with a mic in your hand. And I'm there, my hand shaking, just palm sweating. And I'm like, man, this is crazy. But I remember telling myself in that moment, this might only happen once. You can't let nerves ruin it.
Yeah.
It would be such a waste to let nerves ruin a once in a lifetime opportunity. And just breathing, and I was like, whatever happens, happens. I'm just going to put on a show.
Yeah.
And so from the second the song kicked off, I'm like, I have to move. So if you see the audition, I'm literally all over the place, all over the stage, because I'm like, I'm putting on a show. Forget the coaches. Like, this is my 15 seconds of fame right here.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, no, I never expected the four coaches to turn around. I was praying for one. And, you know, my family will tell you that I never expected four. I just wanted one. And for four to turn was the most surreal moment to this day.
Was there one that you wanted more than the other? I mean, we know who you chose, but...
I wanted Blake. I feel like that was, you know, country... That was like the seal of approval. If you can get Blake Shelton to turn around, you sing country music.
So then how did you choose?
Right. How'd you choose Camila instead of, you know,
Mr.
Country
Shelton?
Music.
Yeah. That was the hardest decision I've ever had to make, too. You're standing on that stage. They don't tell you who to pick. It's your choice. And I'm standing there on that stage. And they only show about 5 minutes of what was a 45-minute debate.
Wow.
Between Blake and Camila and John and Gwen. And I was standing there for like 45 minutes while they were going back and forth.
Oh, God.
And I'm constantly switching. I'm like, no, I got to go Blake. No, I got to go Camila. No. And then Gwen had me for a minute.
Wow. And, so it's real.
It's real. No,
I didn't know it lasted that long. The selling of the coach, you know.
Dang.
30 to 45 minutes of real time. It felt like 5 seconds, but it was a long time.
What did it? What made the click to be like, okay, her?
They had planted a little seed in my head like, hey, listen, it might be cool. There's a cool Miami connection here. There's a cool Cuban-American connection here. Might be a good storyline. But honestly, what really did it for me was the way Camila fought and also said, you're a country singer and I'm going to keep you country, but you have some range, you know, so I'd like to see what we can do with you in some other areas.
Cool. What was she like in the, because you stayed on. I mean, you were there for a while.
Yeah.
So what was she like as a coach for a little bit? Is that what you call them?
Yeah, coaches.
Coach, yeah.
She was super cool. She honestly, down to earth, funny. And it was also a level of, like I said before, earlier, it's a level of understanding here where I know how to interact with you because you're like people from my home, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there was an immediate like... You know, que hola. You know, every time I walked into the room and we just kind of had a connection there.
That's amazing. So what is happening now and what's next and what can people look forward to from the Cuban Cowboy?
Yeah, there's a lot coming. There really is. 2024 is packed. A lot of music releases. I'm working now. As you said, Motherland's coming out very soon. There's a music video for it. I'm thrilled. To be partnering with some Miami-based companies as well. That'll be coming up. And then I have a bunch of music. I should have an EP working before the summer. I'm going to try to spend most of the summer touring. I'm putting on a showcase now in Nashville to bring on a booking agency and a publisher and all the fun things. But there's a lot of music coming. There's a lot of music with influences of Miami and where I come from. Some boat music coming. So I'm excited for that.
And where can they find you, Orlando? Tell us everywhere that people can find you.
You got Instagram, Orlando J. Mendez Music. Or if you put in Orlando Mendez Music, it'll come up. TikTok, same thing, Orlando Mendez Music. I'm on Facebook, Orlando Mendez. You find me there. X, formerly Twitter, you can find me there. Orlando Mendez on all those outlets. And then, of course, wherever you listen to music, Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, under Orlando Mendez.
Amazing. And we're going to be seeing a lot of you. And that is a beautiful thing.
Yes.
Thank you so much for being with us today. This has been amazing. Yeah. Just having you here has been wonderful. So thank you for coming to our nest.
This is such a pleasure. And I was honored to be part of the nest.
You'll always be.
All right, guys. See you next time. Hear you next time on Never the Empty Nest.
Yeah.
All of your success, she says, all the great things ahead. I'll be here when it's time to see you again. And if you fall, she says, if someone breaks your heart, I'll mend your wounds in this nest of ours till you're ready to depart.